Today we are reaching the end of our journey series. We've been over these last few weeks, this autumn term, in the book of Exodus, and we've been thinking about different life lessons. There's five scenes in these chapters that we've been studying, and each week we've been drawing out a different life lesson, and our last life lesson is very simple. It is, be ready to listen. And as I've been preparing this week, I've been thinking this seems like an excellent climax to me to this series, because in a sense, this whole series has been about the people of God journeying through the desert. And as they do so, they're learning and knowing something of God's wisdom. It's a great metaphor for life as we journey through life. And so being ready to listen is a really fitting climax, I think, to this series. Having been rescued, as we've seen, from slavery in Egypt, these people are precious. They now belong to God. And as they journey, God is forming them and establishing them into a people who will know him and who will live for his glory. So I was wondering whether to do a little recap. There's a lot of words on the screen here, but you'll remember some of this. We don't have to read them all. There is a method in our madness. The first five life lessons, in a sense, were all they all speak of the goodness of God to these fledgling people. And we saw how God was stretching them and growing them and healing them and changing them and providing for them and refreshing them. They saw something in the wilderness of the goodness of God. But the more they got to know God better, of course, the more they were getting to know themselves better. And so the middle three life lessons, I gave them to Elliot because they were so hard. So well played to Elliot for leading us through those. The middle three lessons held a mirror to us, didn't they? Showing us what the people were like in their complaining and controlling and criticizing. And it seems to me, in these chapters at least, that like a parent, God is so patient with his people as they grumble and manipulate and resist him and resist Moses. And then in the final four life lessons, we've been thinking about being prepared. So this is where we've been recently. Be ready to fight. Be ready to welcome. Be ready to serve. And now finally, we're landing with our final lesson. Be ready to listen. Now, the idea of listening is very prominent. It's right here, staring us in the face, in the second half of chapter 18. If you've got your finger in the page there, it's page 76. If you've got one of our Red Church Bibles, it'd be great if you're in the text there. If you look at verse 19, Jethro, first of all, this is Moses' father-in-law. He observes what's going on. And he says to Moses, listen now to me, and I'll give you some advice. Jethro says to him, listen up, and I'll give you some advice, and may God be with you. And then look at verse 24, it's on the screen here. Incredibly, this great man of God, this great leader, there's almost a million people here. He's led them out of Egypt through the Red Sea by God's help. And here in this chapter, incredibly, it says, Moses listened to his father-in-law and did everything he said. That's an amazing verse, isn't it? Now, I think we can find listening hard for all sorts of reasons. Someone once said, I don't know who said this, some wise spark said that we've got two ears and one mouth, so we should listen twice as much as we talk. Sometimes I think we've got like one ear and two mouths. That would be grotesque, wouldn't it? And we talk twice as much as we listen sometimes, don't we? I know I do. Sometimes we think maybe we know it all. As I'm getting older, I'm finding that the more I learn, the more I realise that I don't know, if anything. Sometimes we can also, can't we, listen to the wrong advice, and we realise only too late that those we listened to didn't actually have our best interests at heart, and we listened to them and we followed them and it didn't work out well, and we possibly shouldn't have listened to the wrong advice. I also think, and you'll agree with me on this, that the technology that we are now surrounded with seriously affects how we listen, doesn't it? Sometimes on social media, we tend to only listen to people or ideas that we agree with. And so our kind of social media becomes like an echo chamber, we call it, don't we, where we're only reinforcing our own bias and not listening to things that we might disagree with. Or I don't know, maybe the social media algorithms are tailoring what we listen to in ways that influence us without us even realising. It's above my pay grade, all that, but I don't know. And how hard it is to know who and what to listen to in this age of information overload. This week I did a quick test, and I just typed into to Google search engine the word listening. Just typed in that word, pressed enter, and it returned a mind-boggling 4.9 billion responses in 0.29 of a second. So my sermon prep took a bit longer this week. It would literally take me more than a lifetime to sift through all of that. Doesn't it feel totally overwhelming? We now carry infinite libraries of data in our pockets. And we know, don't we, that we can't just rely on our own limited, finite wisdom. But how do we know if what and who we're listening to is good for us? It's a bit overwhelming, isn't it? Unsettling. How do we know if what we're listening to is wisdom? Maybe I can say it like this. If wisdom came to us, what kind of clothes would they be wearing? How would we recognize what wisdom looked like when it came to us? What are the marks of wisdom? And how can we recognize wisdom in our lives so that we can listen to it carefully and be healthy as a result? Well, I want to be really simple today, and I hope that we'll see two important things in this passage. Putting it very simply, I think Jethro can and will help us to see something of what wisdom might look like. And then I think Moses can really help us to see how to listen carefully when we come across beautiful wisdom. So we're going to think about Jethro first, and then we'll think about Moses, and then we'll try and draw those threads together as we close, not just today, but our series as well. So first of all, Jethro, let's think about beautiful wisdom. Let's just remind ourselves of the situation here. This chapter 18 has two halves, and Jethro is the big character in a sense in both. And in this chapter, Jethro sees two different things. The first thing he sees, which we've already looked at, is that these people, under Moses' guidance, have been rescued from slavery by God. He's in the first half of the chapter, he sees, wow, look at what God has done for these people. That's the first thing he sees. It's a total delight to him. In fact, as a result of him seeing what God has done for these people, he believes in God. He's like a new convert here. He says in the early part of this chapter, now I know that the Lord is greater than all of the gods. But the second thing he sees is these people as a new community fumbling their way forward, trying to work out how to do stuff. So he sees the glory of what's happened to them, and he sees the fragility of their current state. Two things in this chapter of two halves. The amazing wonder of their salvation, and then the incredible challenge of caring for such a diverse group of people. As a leader, Moses is trying his best here, but he's in obvious danger of literally burning out. The people's needs are never ending. It's like a waterfall that keeps coming. And so the work never stops. There are no boundaries. It's coming at him from all directions. So Jethro says, Moses, listen. Listen to me. This can't carry on like this. So let's try and pick out some ingredients of Jethro's wisdom here. And the reason we're doing this is so that we can look for them. So when you're listening, look for these four marks when you're wondering who to listen to. I think the first thing we see here in Jethro is something of compassion. I think the first thing to observe here is Jethro's empathy and kindness. Sometimes when people try to give advice in a situation, there's a subtle thing going on, and it's like destructive sabotage, you know. I don't know what's wrong here. There's nothing of that here, is there, with Jethro? He's not cynical. He's not secretly glad that Moses is struggling or taking any pleasure in that. He's not scoring points or trying to say to Moses or anybody else, I told you this would happen. He isn't using Moses' struggle to make himself look good. We first met Jethro actually back in chapter 2. And you might remember that for 40 years, Moses had been tending Jethro's sheep in this very area, Midian. Married Jethro's daughter. And I think Jethro in this chapter must be looking at Moses and thinking, look at you now. Look at you now, Moses. I remember when you were tending my sheep. What a promotion you've had, mate. You're now tending God's sheep. Wow. And I love the fact that instead of criticizing or undermining Moses, Jethro seems to affirm him, both in the good work that he's trying to do and in his motives for doing it. He doesn't undermine him or his motives. Jethro is here to help Moses practically from a place of compassion and kindness and care. I think there's kindness here too in the fact that Jethro, he doesn't just point out all the problems. What Jethro does here very thoughtfully is offer solutions. You know the kind of people who, they're kind of sitting there on the sidelines with their feet up smoking a cigar, wanting to like lob in, you know, all the snags and like, but they haven't given any thought to how it might get fixed. Jethro's the total opposite of that, isn't it? His heart goes out to Moses, who is doing his best, and he comes here to help him, not to crush him. And I love also the fact that Jethro seems to let the whole day unfold, and then he speaks to Moses privately after sunset, the end of the day. He doesn't barge in. He's not like a bull in a china shop. There's a kindness and a compassion and an empathy. Wisdom, true wisdom, will always have the mark of kindness and compassion about it. Here's a second thing to look for and a second thing to see. I think truth is another mark of wisdom. And the second thing to see here is that Jethro assumes, and in his worldview, if you like, he assumes that there is a framework of fairness and justice to operate within. And there's a couple of things going on there. On the one hand, Jethro is not just being nice to Moses here. We know what that feels like, don't we, when someone is just being nice. Jethro understands that sometimes Moses will have to say hard things. And he will have to be strong in his leadership as he arbitrates disputes. But I think Jethro also recognizes that if Moses is going to do this task well, he's not going to be able to just go with his feelings on a given day. And he's not like waiting for people in this line to come to him and then telling them to look inside themselves for answers and to like do whatever feels right to them on a given day. So look, we read this last week, but look with me at verse 15. Moses describes how the people come to him with their disputes to seek God's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it's brought to me and I decide between the parties and inform them of God's decrees and instructions. And you can imagine the issues that Moses is dealing with here, can't you? Well, maybe you can't. I'll give you some examples. My neighbour ate all the manna we'd collected. My friend sold me a cow and it turned out to be diseased. I want my money back. My brother borrowed my cart and he overloaded it and the wheels collapsed. What should we do? My neighbour's son in our street got too frisky with my daughter. I want you to tell him to stop it. All day long. All day long, till sunset, it says, Moses is dealing with disputes. Moses' work here is necessary partly because our human relationships have a tendency to break down, don't they? And people are falling out and difficult situations. Whose fault is it? And who... But in verse 20, Jethro grasps that Moses' task involves two things. One of them is education, and the other one is application. Moses is to teach them God's decrees and instructions and show them the way they are to live and how they are to behave. You get that? What Moses' job is to tell them what God thinks and to show them how to live in the light of that. His task was to apply the wisdom of God to real life situations. The timing of this chapter is actually very striking because in the next chapter, they arrive at Mount Sinai. And there, Moses is going to go up a mountain, invited by God to receive the Ten Commandments from God directly. But here, this chapter seems like out of place. In this chapter, it seems that even before God has formally given them his laws, it seems that Moses and the people and Jethro already have somehow a sense that ethics are not just subjective, but they grounded in the character of God. Even before the Ten Commandments are given, they seem to know that. You know, Cain knew that he shouldn't have killed his brother Abel. You know, it's like these laws. When God gives the Ten Commandments, I think everyone goes, yeah, that's good. We kind of know that it's not grounded inside of us in our feelings. It's grounded in the character of God. So truth, objectivity, is an important component of wisdom. The third thing here, this is a horrible word, incorruptible. I was trying to think of a better one, but this one will do. What I'm trying to say here is the third thing that Jethro recognises is the importance of integrity in leadership. Verse 21. Jethro specifies the kinds of characters Moses should look for. Select capable men from all the people, men who fear God. Trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain. It's all about maturity, reliability. Jethro is saying, Moses, you need to find other people to help you in this task who can't be bribed. That's where the word incorruptible comes from. They're not, they can be trusted to do what is right. Don't we need leaders who can be trusted to do what is right, who are incorruptible? Jane and I really enjoyed watching the crime drama Line of Duty that was on TV over the past few years, and it was all about the police, and the drama was all about who it was in the senior ranks of the police. It was corrupt. And it became a bit of a joke in our house. If anybody looked like they were telling a dodgy story, some bright spark in our family would say something along the lines of them being a bent copper or something. Jethro here is insisting that Moses should not recruit bent coppers, isn't he? Character is crucial. Integrity is not like an optional extra. Competence, yes, but character is crucial. So beautiful wisdom, compassionate, truthful, incorruptible. And the fourth thing I want to notice, the final ingredient here, is Jethro's lack of favoritism. And I think this is an interesting one. His love for Moses is very clear. We've seen that. But it's also true that Jethro isn't just taking sides here. We can see his bid in a few places, but you can see it in verse 23. Jethro concludes his advice and he says, Moses, if you do this and God so commands, two things will happen. You will be able to stand the strain, and all these people will go home satisfied. Do you see that? I think sometimes, and this can happen particularly when we're hurting, we tend to want people to agree with us and affirm us and our view of things. And there can be other times where we might not be needing that, but people only give us the advice that they think we want to hear, you know? And there's something slightly, I don't know, they're just trying to big us up, you know? There's an element of that in their advice. And of course, we do need people to love us. We do need affirmation. But there's something about Jethro's wisdom here that is more holistic than that. His wisdom goes beyond just making Moses feel better by demonizing others. Jethro could have responded with, oh, Moses, poor you. I don't know how you put up with them. They're a nightmare, aren't they, these people? Absolute riffraff. You're doing such a great job, mate. I've no idea how you put up with this community. I'm on your side. Subtext, I'm not on their side. You get that? That sometimes we hear that, don't we? That kind of advice. I think Jethro here, he doesn't just side with Moses and condemn everybody else. But he also doesn't side with everybody else and criticise Moses. He's not party political here, is he? He has the whole community's good in mind. And true wisdom tends to seek that, doesn't it? True wisdom tends to unite rather than drive apart and drive a wedge into things. So I want to suggest that Jethro's advice here is full of the most remarkable, beautiful wisdom. Compassion, truth, integrity, not biased. So if we are trying to assess whether advice we're receiving is good and wholesome or not, these are the kind of clothes that good wisdom tends to wear. We can look for that. Wisdom won't just give us easy, comforting answers, but will sometimes stretch us and challenge us. And I think Jethro is a wonderful example of wisdom here. There's some really bad father-in-laws in the Bible. Jacob's father-in-law, Laban, well, Jacob himself was a bit of a rotter, wasn't he? But there's some bad examples of father-in-laws, but what an absolute gem of a father-in-law Jethro is here. Absolutely brilliant. What a lifesaver Jethro is for Moses here in this moment. Well, let's turn to Moses. And I want to take a different tack with Moses, because so we'll think about the negatives here. Because as I'm like reading this, I can think of so many reasons why Moses might have chosen to tell Jethro where to get off. Jethro, I'm not listening to you, mate. I'm not having this. One of them could have been bitterness because of how hard the task was. I think you would share this. I can't help but feel for Moses. What a thankless task he had. Most of this journey we've been looking at, the people were wanting to kill him. And yet here Moses said, we read it already in verse 15, the people come to me wanting to seek God's will. Imagine looking after a group of people like that, that on the one hand wanted to kill you, and then the next day wanted you to tell them what God thinks. It's like they're either moaning or wanting answers. It's like, what an absolute nightmare of a job Moses had. I think we could also understand and forgive Moses if he didn't trust these people to help him, given how they'd behaved so far. Jethro, your advice would be good if I could rely on these Muppets. I don't trust them. I've no idea how I could ever give them a job. You could forgive Moses for taking that approach. But despite the difficulties, he does find the ability to delegate and to liberate others to support the work that was so necessary. I think, secondly, Moses could also have been offended by Jethro if he was the kind of person who had a lurking pride. Jethro, you show up after I've done all the work. You've only actually been a believer for 5 minutes. I've been doing this on my own for a long time. There's nothing, mate, that you could say to me that I don't know already. Wind it in. I mean, thankfully Moses doesn't say that, but you get that? I think his response is remarkable. Moses' mistake here, of course, if he had responded like that, would be to think that he had rescued the people and not God, wouldn't it? But isn't it easy for pride like that to take root and to stop us from being open? I think another possible aspect is a kind of Moses could have been like super spiritual here, we said already that in the next chapter, Moses is going to meet God on Mount Sinai. It is incredible to me that this encounter happens here right before that. Why does God not wait to tell him these instructions on the mountain? Why does God choose to use a newly converted pagan priest to give instructions to Moses that are so important to the nation's health? Moses is on first name terms with God. And that in itself could have led to Moses saying, Jethro, I don't need to listen to you. I've got a hotline to God and I'm going to wait to see what he says. Well, don't misunderstand me here. This is not a call to be gullible. And Moses is always going to be weighing what Jethro says to him. You know that. But isn't it striking that Moses has the humility and the grace to listen well to a new believer's common sense rather than be puffed up with his own importance and position? Isn't it striking? I think another way that pride plays out is in a kind of defensive posture as well. Sometimes the issue is being oversensitive to criticism, isn't it? And I wonder whether his overwork could ironically have added to that. Can you not see how hard I'm working here, Jethro? I've been at this all day, every day. And then you have the temerity to come and tell me to reorganize. I haven't got time to reorganize. He almost doesn't have time to think about what the solution might be. He's just on the treadmill, isn't he, of being busy all day, every day, doing his best. How hard it is for us to listen well when we're stretched. We're doing our best. It's not that his motives are bad. Jethro, just leave me alone and stop telling me what to do. I haven't got time. So, bitterness, pride. Perhaps Moses might have been afraid. Afraid, perhaps, of looking weak. Think about that. I can't take the advice of someone else, especially an outsider. It'll make me look like I don't know what I'm doing. People will think I've lost it. I think we often think like this, don't we? But we know when we stop and think about it that actually the opposite is true. Don't we respect those leaders who have the humility to listen well? In the book of Proverbs, in the Old Testament, it says, instruct a wise man and he will be wiser still. Instruct a wise man and he will be wiser still. A wise person listens to advice rather than pretending they don't need it to try and look strong in other people's eyes. So fear. I think one final thing that you could think of loads more, I'm sure, is that I think Moses here could have been in love with the power that he now had. This is a big one, isn't it? Sometimes in life, you know, we can have this need to be needed, can't we? Here he is burning out, but that in itself could be like a drug, couldn't it? That he couldn't do without. Every day he gets up and he thinks, oh, I need my fix today. Maybe he loved the queues of people lining up outside of his tent to hear his judgments. Maybe he liked being the centre of attention and everyone hanging on his every word. Maybe he loved the fact that things revolved all around him. Maybe he didn't want his father-in-law to rob him of all of that. To be in a situation where we feel that everyone needs us can be intoxicating, can't it? Maybe he was addicted and had fallen in love with the power and influence that he now had. Jethro, go away. I like things the way they are. Well, in the light of all these possible responses, I want to remind you of verse 24 here, which is stunning. Moses listened to his father-in-law. And more than listen, he did everything his father-in-law said. I find it very compelling that even as Moses here, as a leader, seeks to teach and lead other people, he is humble enough to listen to wise advice. Do we not need leaders like that? What a remarkable chapter this is. Well, as we close today and as we close our series, I thought it'd be good for us just to draw together these two brilliant examples of wisdom and humility, to draw them together and to point you forward to Jesus. So let's close with this. Not just be ready to listen, but be ready to listen humbly to beautiful wisdom. I think in a sense this whole series has been about wisdom. As we've explored these 12 life lessons, we could sum up the whole Bible story in a sense as an encouragement to us to listen humbly to beautiful wisdom. But in the end, we discover that biblical wisdom is not a thing or a list or an idea or a code of ethics. Wisdom is ultimately found incarnate in a person, the Lord Jesus. So if we scroll forward to the Gospels, we come to the strange account. We don't need to turn to it. Strange account in the Gospels that has become known as the transfiguration of Jesus. The story is told in three of the four Gospels. Jesus takes three of his closest friends up another mountain where they got a brief glimpse of the true glory of Christ. The Son of God entered humanity by being born as a real human. And if you'd seen him walking down the street, he wouldn't have struck you as unusual. But on this day, on this mountain, Jesus' closest friends saw for a few moments the shining beauty of Jesus. It's almost like the curtains were just drawn back for a second. And as the glory dazzles and envelops them, they hear the voice of God the Father speaking. And this is what he says. This is God the Father speaking. These are not small words. This is my Son, whom I love. With him, I am well pleased. The word there is delighted. When I look at him, it makes my heart sing. And how does God the Father close? Listen to him. Listen to him. This is my Son whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him. Do you want to know who to listen to? God himself says, listen to my Son. Listen to him. We've been thinking about wisdom for life in this whole series, but here God the Father signposts us to Jesus, who is in a class all by himself, greater than Moses, greater than anyone. He is unique. And to God, his Father, he is utterly and perfectly delightful. And everything that we've already said about Jethro's wisdom is taken to like stratospheric heights in Jesus. His compassion knows no limits. His truth and justice towers high over all. His integrity is completely unblemished. He sees things as they really are, and his love is without favouritism or bias. True and ultimate and beautiful wisdom is found, it's embodied in a person who is supremely attractive. We're approaching Christmas, of course, and one of the stunning things is that this sublime wisdom is also so wonderfully humble. Jesus was born, and Mary and Joseph held the magnificent and infinite wisdom of God in their arms. He looked so ordinary. There was no bling or attention seeking. Jesus doesn't even say, look at me, but waits for his father to say, listen to him. We read earlier about the wisdom of God from 1 Corinthians chapter 1. We haven't got time to go into all of that. But Paul's question there is the one we were asking at the beginning, in a sense. Who should we listen to? Paul's question there is, where is the wise person? Where can we find wisdom? Where can we go to hear true, soul-enriching wisdom? And Paul's answer, essentially, in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, is that God has turned the world's wisdom on its head, upside down. The world thinks it's wise, but God has demonstrated his superior wisdom in two ways. The first is through the foolishness of the cross, so that what looked like a total defeat was actually the most stunning victory. And instead of grasping for power like the world so often does, Jesus lays down his life. God himself takes the place of sinful humans. And Jesus upholds God's perfect justice, but he does it in a way that releases his eternal mercy and grace to sinners. And the second way, Paul says, God reveals his wisdom is that he also calls the most unlikely people to experience this. Paul says our world promotes success and strength and cleverness. But look at verse 26 in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. It says, brothers and sisters, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are. God chose the failing and the weak and the foolish, and he lavished his kindness on them. That means that we don't have to dress up to impress God. If we could do that, it would only make us boast, wouldn't it? But Paul concludes by saying, it is because of God that you are in Christ Jesus, who has become for us wisdom from God. That is our righteousness, holiness, and redemption. This is a great place, I think, for us to finish our series, because Jesus himself is wisdom for our journey. Jesus himself, he's not pointing us to wisdom. He himself is our wisdom. All the life lessons that we've been unpacking find their completion and fulfillment in him. And it's as we listen to and follow him that we're changed to become like him. As we close, one final thing about listening is that our listening is most truly evidenced by our doing. And it says that in this chapter. The reason Moses did what he did was because he trusted Jethro's wise advice, wasn't he? He listened and he did something. And I want to say to us, so it is with us, to listen to Jesus is not just to admire him or to like him. It is to wholeheartedly trust and follow him. Listening and then ignoring is not really listening, is it? Sometimes I think that listening and not responding to Jesus is a bit like window shopping. You know, so you'll be doing this. You'll be going Christmas shopping if you haven't done it already. I haven't even started. Probably won't start till Christmas Eve. But when we go to the shops and we're window shopping, we see something that we like and we think, I'll come back. I'll buy that next week or tomorrow. That looks nice, but I'll come back another day. Listen, what would prevent you today, now, in this moment, from listening humbly to the beautiful wisdom found in Jesus? You can't window shop him and say, I'll buy him tomorrow. I'll come back tomorrow. I'll come back next week. Where else could you go to find all that you need? I want to encourage you, every single one of you, to open your heart to him and listen humbly to his beautiful wisdom. And may that wisdom be the wisdom that you know in your journey through life. Oh, Father in heaven, we are so thankful that you have not left us to fumble our way forward in the dark somehow, but you have given us your wisdom in your word, but also in the living word, the Lord Jesus. We thank you that you have given us your very best, your own beautiful Son. We thank you that he is our wisdom for the journey of life that we're all involved in. Lord, would you soften and open our hearts to listen to him as you command. Bless us, feed us, nourish us, encourage us, and join us to Jesus, we pray. And we pray in his good and powerful name. Amen.